Welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. This week we're going to be talking about Ghostbane and our favorite scary games. My name is Bobby.
My name's Nick.
Boo, I'm Amanda.
Oh God,
and I'm terrified. Ooh. Welcome back, Amanda. It's been quite a bit since you've been on. I think you did like a spot here or there, but like, yeah, you haven't been on.
Back on payroll.
Yeah. Is this a smattering of things to come?
I believe so. Yeah, I've been like really looking forward to doing some more interviews. I did the Desktop Explorer interview, and I've got another one coming up for As Dusk Falls with Caroline Marshall, I think is her name. And I'm going to be hopefully adding in more interviews and be back on a more regular basis starting in November after DLG Con, which brings us to our plug, right, Emilio?
Yeah. Real soon. So when you guys hear this, we're recording this a little earlier, but when you guys hear this, you have like 2 days to clear your schedule. Tell the in-laws to fuck off. Tell the children they got to walk themselves to school. Tell the wife that she's going to have to go fuck herself now. Or the husband, whatever. It's DLG Con, guys. We're going to play a lot of video games all together. A lot of people, hopefully, if anybody heeds my call. And yeah, we're going to have a bunch of stuff. We're going to have prizes. We're going to have drinks. Yeah, it's BYOB, unfortunately. Yeah, we're going to be playing multiplayer games and having a blast. So please join us for our first digital DLG Con.
I know what you're thinking.
November 1st through 3rd.
It's going to be a bunch of fucking nerds. It's going to be really awkward. There's going to be heavy breathing, sweaty hands, a little bit of smelly smells. It's okay. Accept yourself. Just join us.
Right? Just join us. We are your people.
We know who you are, who you really are.
Gross. All right. So this week is our Halloween episode, our spooky, spooktacular Halloween episode. And we're going to kick it off by talking about Ghostbane. So we did something phenomenal here, something that never happens. All of us, most of us, played a game together.
Some of us.
Part of us. Of us.
Yeah.
A section
and that
of us.
Game was Ghostbane. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It was a very obvious Phasmophobia clone, but I think it does a little bit more than Phasmophobia. So We had a chance to play this game together. We were probably the only people playing that game. Not a whole lot of...
One of 55, or three of 55.
Not a whole lot, but it's always fun when we all play the same game because then we can talk about our experience there.
Yeah, especially when Bobby writes down like 50 notes and Nick and I have zero.
No notes.
I mean, at this point...
Yeah. Oh, I got some notes. Okay. So, and by the way, if you're watching the video here, I just want to call attention to my amazing hat that I'm wearing here. If you know what this is, I'm not even going to tell you what hat this is. If you know, folks. All right. It's one time my buddy Keith, it's a little hint there.
I know what it is.
All right. But yeah, so Phasmophobia, as we started playing this game, I feel like Nick was very critical of it. You know, he's a big Phasmophobia fanboy. I felt a lot of hate coming towards this game. But I am going to say that this game was better than Phasmophobia. It's not good. Yeah. Nobody is going to like jump ship and start playing this game and leave Phasmophobia in droves. That's not going to happen. But I do think this game does a lot more than Phasmophobia and a lot of the things that I wanted from that game. So I don't know.
So one thing I'll say about it, and I'm not being too hypercritical, is the scary parts are scary. Okay. When the, like the jump scares happen or like the like ghost events happen, they're a lot more scarier than Phasmophobia.
Well, what I Nick, think, what I think about that is that you're probably so used to the engine on Phasmophobia and how they do things. You were introduced to new jump scares and new ways of scaring you. And so that's why
they were a little bit more extreme, like covering the,
really
blood,
realistic.
The walls in blood and a bunch of other stuff. That's the other thing is like the engine and the graphics are way better than Phasmophobia. Hands down, the audio is better. It's made in a way newer engine than Phasmophobia is. And the thing is we have to remember that Phasmophobia is supposed to be a VR game. Like, that's what it's supposed to, it's intended to be a VR game. And so it, we play it as a normal game because we're just
normal,
I guess.
They knew that you were out there.
But I like Ghostbane. Am I saying it's better than Phasmophobia? No.
Yeah, I asked them to do it.
I think when Phasmophobia 2 comes out, we're probably going to have a ghost hunting aspect to it. But the way Ghostbane is, let me describe like a typical game of Ghostbane because we ended up playing 4. You find where the ghost is at, which is really easy because there's a lot of noise coming from wherever the fuck it's at. And then you do a couple of things that you can teleport to your hands, which I think is kind of cheesy. Like, I understand wanting to make the differences and maybe a quality of life update, but the way that you can teleport things back to the bus is kind of weird. But once you find out what the ghost is and you put it in, if you're wrong, the mission just ends. Like, there goes 20 minutes. And you hardly get any money or anything else out of that. But once you do find out the ghost, you start like the quote unquote real game, which is like eliminating the ghost using like rituals and like items and things like that. I think that part's amazing. I think the idea of that now is some of the execution of the game a little wacky, like chasing a cat doll while a fucking demon is chasing you. No, it's not. I don't think that's the best. What is hilarious to me, at least in the game, though, is that every ghost has a religion and you can scare them away with a relic from another religion.
That's great.
Yeah. So when you find out what the ghost is, it's like ghost religion, Catholic. And you're like, oh, look at that. I guess.
Let me dangle a little blowy in front of it.
Yeah.
Ooh,
low blow. You know, the Diocese of L.A. just paid out $880 million to sexual assault victims. But however, what I will say is that I don't like the things that they put in the game because of the fact that they were, I don't know if they had too much time or not. There's all these little physics games in the beginning of in the lobby. It's like, you can play pool, you can play darts, you can play beer pong, you can play bowling. Why put that in the game if shit doesn't work or shit is not working correctly?
Yeah. They were definitely focusing on the wrong stuff. The textures are really great. The character customization, all of that stuff should be secondary or tertiary to a solid engine that works. Yes. I don't care if it's stick figures, dude, if it works right, like that's the priority. But yeah, there is definitely things that I liked about this game more than Phasmophobia, but I wishing that I was playing Phasmophobia instead of playing this while I was playing it, yes. But, it has so many more years of development. Head start.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't think a lot of people are going to be playing this, so I don't know how, Phasmophobia, they had to really start developing it because so many people started playing it, so they had to get those updates out. I don't know if we're going to see that with this game. But what I like about Ghostbane is it actually lets you do some ghost busting. So in Phasmophobia, you go in there and you identify the ghost. That's pretty much it. Maybe there's some secondary objectives, but really you're just identifying the ghost. In Ghostbane, you actually have to exorcise the demons. Like you're going in there. They even got like kind of like a proton pack, I guess you would say, where you have to zap these ghosts. And when this event happens, they just teleport everybody to the event too. There's a lot of shortcuts in Ghostbane that Phasmophobia doesn't have. Nick talked about how you can teleport items that maybe you dropped in the house or in the basement.
Like that.
You don't want to run down there and get that. You can just teleport it back to the truck. Very easy. Also, if there's, like I said, an event, all players get sucked to that event. And then a few other things too. So in Phasmophobia, you have to talk into the mic. There's parts where you have to speak to the voice. This game has that too, but instead of doing that, you can just hit a button and it reads it for you, reads it out loud for you. So I kind of like that addition. I like some of the things that they did there, but I think what I really enjoy about this game is that they gave you more to do with the ghosts. And there's a very clear checklist in order of what you need to do. And the ghosts are very visual. So I actually saw a ghost. I've never seen a ghost in Phasmophobia. You take pictures of them and they're kind of like a little blur or something like that. But in this, it's like, oh, that is, if you look at the screenshots of this game, that's obviously a ghost there. You know, it looks like a Cenobite or something. So
I got a quick question for you, Bobby. and this is not to like be like gotcha or whatever, or like you don't, you're not good at Phasmophobia or something, but when's the last time you played the game?
Within the last year.
Okay. Yeah. If that's the case, you might be running into ghosts that don't show themselves. For example, like in the challenges, there are ghosts that ghost types that are not usually in the base game of like normal difficulty or harder difficulty. They're usually on the hardest difficulties. And then, for example, there's a ghost type where its form is always being shown while it's hunting. And so you turn around and you're like, oh, fuck, it's right there.
Well, I mean, it's not only that, but in Ghostbane, they have jump scares in this game. When you walk into a room, the entire room will just like change to a shade of gray, and there'll be like this horrific image that just shows on the screen for half a second, and the audio shock cue plays, and it makes you jump and yell into the mic. And I mean, you know, jump scares, I'm not a huge fan of them, but I mean, it's something. There's something going on here, as opposed to Phasmophobia, where I'm walking around and like, I don't see the cup that's being thrown behind me or something falling off. I don't see it or hear it. You know, it just, I feel like I'm not aware of what's happening, but.
Days.
He just dies in the closet.
Yeah. Days, I'm walking around a little creepy mansion. I'm looking for a light switch. And then all of a sudden, I'm in a bloody room with 13 skeletons on the walls for 1 second. And then it goes, ah, and then you're back to the, and you're like, what the fuck was that, dude? Does it have anything to do with the game? I don't know, but it's setting a mood.
Terrifying. I remember when you first suggested like all of us playing, and I looked up the trailer and I was like, yeah, I'd be down. I love every year, especially around this time, just pushing my limit, because I'm such a little scaredy cat, but I love it. I love horror games and horror movies, even though they scare the shit out of me, and I have a very small threshold for it. I get scared by Skyrim, so it's like, it doesn't take much. And looking up Ghostbane, I was like, oh, this looks legit terrifying at some points, and like, especially with the jump scare stuff, that's terrifying. Yeah, that's scary. But
now, knowing what we know, would you guys recommend this? I don't think you can recommend the purchase right now.
Well, here's the problem. Nobody's playing this game, and you have to have a community for this game to work. I think it's, honestly, I like it better. I'd rather play it than Phasmophobia, but the fact that there's just no community there. I mean, if you guys were playing and you wanted to play this, then yeah, of course I'd play it. But I don't think there's any chance I'm going to be jumping into a game with a bunch of strangers, because there's just not a community behind it. And that's just sad. That's just too bad.
Yeah.
When we were playing, there was only 55 people online.
Yeah.
But that kind of sends the numbers at all.
Not a whole lot of people.
I'm glad we did 55 minutes on it. Let's move on.
All right. So let's talk about our favorite scary games. Now, we asked our listeners what their favorite games were, their favorite scary games. And we got a few responses, so we're going to pepper those in as we talk about ours. First one comes from Time Killer B, and he recommends Fear and Fear Files. And he says, Fear and Fear Files creeped me out pretty good. Such a good, fun classic. I hope that either comes back or they reboot the game.
Do you guys have any time in Fear?
Oh yeah, I played a ton of Fear. Fear 1 and also Fear 2. So the first Fear game I loved. It was a first-person shooter. And what does Fear stand for? Someone look that up while I'm blathering on here. It's like first encounter, assault, recon, response, or something like that.
Yeah.
But basically, you play as like this special agent in a troop of people who handle like... You're like a SWAT team that specifically handles paranormal situations. Which is a good premise of the game. And like the main enemy is this little girl, you know, very Japanese, with the black hair hanging over her face, like The Ring or like a Japanese horror movie. And
The Grudge.
Yeah. But the first one came out in 2005. I really enjoyed that game. Pretty standard first person shooter, a lot of scary aspects. Now, Fear Files is a combination, I think, of the DLC that came after that, Perseus Mandate and Extraction Point. I can't remember the name. But by the time they got to Fear 2, it was just basically any other first person shooter. You know, occasionally the lights would flicker and they're like, oh, yeah, remember, we're a scary game. But, you know, for the most part, it was just a first person shooter.
I remember playing Fear 1. And being like, oh, this is cool. Like, it really is a horror game. You can play an FPS part. There are enemies that are essentially unkillable, and then you have to react to them in some way. I remember it being really groundbreaking because, like, it's hard to give a player the ability to kill things, but also be scared. And mm-hmm. when you have like an assault rifle, and that game does it right. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of people have said is that Fear 4 or the fourth Fear game actually brings a lot of the horror elements back. And I haven't played that one.
So wait, there's a fourth Fear game? I did not know that.
Yeah, there's
he,
I think
he makes
four
things
five.
Up from no, time.
It's either Fear 4 or Fear 3. Let me check.
Yeah, I don't think there's a Fear 4.
417 is
Fear
where...
Fear 3, Fear 2, really... Fear 2 Project Origin, Fear Perseus Mandate. Yeah, Fear 3 is the one in 2011. That's the one that they said that was okay. more...
And I have not played yeah. that one. Yeah, you know, the problem with the first Fear game, as much as I liked it, they would have these jump scares or these things that were supposed to be like really disturbing imagery, but they didn't lock the player camera. So you could totally miss them. You yeah. could be looking completely in the other direction and you would hear that like horror shock cue sound and you're like, oh, something scary happened. It must have happened behind me. So it was completely lost.
So in Space Marine, it tells you to push T if to go look at like
focus.
What's happening. Yeah. yeah. But honestly, if it really comes down to it, I just want the computer to grab my mouse and move me. Like, I think those are the best. Because what
it's
else
like a
could
must-see
you
thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There was one in the first Fear game where you're walking down a ladder and you're looking through the ladder and there's a jump scare there. So that one you can't really miss, but there were quite a few others that I did miss. All right, so let's move on. We'll talk about, I'm going to talk about my first scary game here. Probably my all-time favorite, I would say. I'm going to talk about Outlast. Kind of Outlast in general. My favorite one, Outlast Whistleblower, which is actually the DLC to the first Outlast game. These were very popular about 10 years ago. There were these, this is the peak of that run and hide horror game. As Nick was saying, it's hard to be scared in a video game if you've got a machine gun. So these run and hide games, they've really played on that idea where you were helpless. Alien Isolation, another good example of that. But unlike Alien Isolation, this game is only 6 hours long. Isolation, I think it was like 20 hours. That's too long for a game like that. Horror games, yeah. It's not so much that they're scary. Sometimes they're like stressful and anxiety inducing. And it's just hard to do that for long periods of time. So I feel like shorter run times really help horror games. But in Outlast, you play this investigative journalist who's sneaking into a remote mental asylum, trying to document proof of some inhumane experiment. It's pretty good setup for a horror game. What I really liked about Whistleblower is it goes back and starts as a prequel, and then it also overlaps the story in the first Outlast game, and then it finishes that story because it ended on a cliffhanger. It finishes that and gives you a conclusion. So it really is a nice complement to that original Outlast game.
Did you ever end up playing Outlast Trials?
I didn't, and I kind of want to check that out because they're doing something new. I'd love to check it out, but Outlast 2, I never finished. I started it, and it was, number one, a little too long. You're looking at more like 8 or 9 hours to finish that game, and it was outdoors. It didn't have that claustrophobic mental asylum feel to it, so it didn't, I don't know. And you know, by that time, it was 2017. We were kind of over the run and hide sims, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Alien Isolation was 2014, Outlast was 2013, Amnesia Dark Descent, I think, was even before that. So, I don't know, 2017 felt like a little late to be playing those types of games. But still,
if you want to play Outlast Trials, I'm down to try it. From what I've heard and a lot of people say is that it's like, imagine Phasmophobia, but the ghost is always hunting and you're trying to find a way to escape instead of discover.
Okay, and it's a co-op graphics game, are way better. Right?
Exactly. It's a 4-player co-op game. There's a boss that is constantly chasing everyone, and it behooves you to kind of split into teams of two, or even split into like a single person and a third and like a team of three while the single person distracts the boss. I've watched a lot of gameplay. I just don't have 4 friends to play it with because all my friends are cheap bastards. But yeah, I would love to check it out.
Nice. Yeah, I would probably do that at some time. One last thing I want to say about this. This is my favorite name of any developer. The developer of this game is called Red Barrels. It's the name of the studio. I just think it's the perfect name. We all know what the Red Barrels mean in a video game.
Yeah. Explosive. For me, we just talked about it a little bit. My entry for the scary game of like favorite scary games. Although it's not scary to me that much anymore. When it first came out, it was extremely terrifying. Is Phasmophobia. Man, do I have so many hours in this game, and it doesn't compare to some people, and it makes me feel self-conscious sometimes. One thing that brings the game back, at least to me, that makes it feel really good nowadays is the weekly challenges, although they are running out of ideas for that now, and they're starting to have to repeat them. For example, the latest weekly challenge, all my friends played, and I checked it out, and it was insanely difficult, where you just use a just sound based items. That's it. You just get, you just use sound based items, and then you just fucking guess essentially, because you maybe get one or two of the answers. I like Phasmophobia so much because it's such a great game for me to introduce to people, especially when they get into PC gaming. Even if they're already in PC gaming and they want to try a scary game out, you're like, let's try this game out called Phasmophobia. And if you're a good host and a good Sherpa, you shut your mouth most of the time.
Which you never do, dude. You can't shut that big fat mouth, dude. Well, this thing and then this thing, and then you got to watch out for this thing. I'm like, let me be scared, bro.
Hey,
yeah, I fucked up. Take all the help I can get in that game.
Yeah, and I also second that. Like, as somebody who is very scared but actually really loves Phasmophobia, I appreciate, and I have a rule now where I feel like I'm only going to play if Nick is playing, because I need somebody to hold my hand and be like, Daze, this guy is going to come out at the top of the stairs. Quick, just come on over the salt line right here. Just stay on this side of the salt as I'm running up screaming the stairs, hearing get out in my fucking headphone and just dying. Yeah.
Dude, like one of my friends, for example, he's like, when the hunt happens, let me handle the ghost. And then it's Trevor, and he just has some sage and he's like, bring it on, motherfucker. And that's how it is.
That guy usually dies in movies, but I guess if you know what you're doing.
No, it sounds like a real Bobby. He's ready to ghost bust some things.
Yeah, he's just got a little sage and a lighter. He's like, come on, bitch.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I'm afraid to say it.
But yeah, that's my pick for Phasmophobia. Anybody got anything else to add or questions?
Yeah, dude, I have a problem with the developers, man. I really do. It's four or three guys that work on this at their own pace, and they're just like, they already love it. Let's just piece it out over the years, and we'll keep our day jobs. And it's like, if you have a success on your hand, it's up to you to bring on new help to try to grow that thing as fast as possible. Because, you know, I don't know. I don't think the we'll get to it when we get to it approach is the way. That's not how the game development work. And that's why we end up with what's the other game we played?
Ghost Bane.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just going too slow. They compare them to other game development, dude. It's much, much, much slower.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I'm not saying it isn't, but I think not. I mean, I always want new shit for Phasmophobia to come out. They are coming out with their Red Moon update on like the 28th, and it's saying there's a bunch of shit going to be added and people aren't talking about it. And so I don't know, like, we'll see. I think what it is they've wasted a lot of their budget adding it to consoles, because it comes out for consoles on the same day as the update.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
And I think they're doing just fine. They seem to be making plenty of money.
Sure.
Maybe they don't want to rock the boat, you know.
Sure.
Pull a high res, make a change, and lose everybody.
It could be.
Then they'd all go play Ghostbane. All right. We're going to check in with another listener here and see what they've got to say about scary games. This one is from Atom. He says, Parasite Eve was my favorite horror game when I was a kid. This is followed by Resident Evil 1 and The House of the Dead. I stopped playing horror games around middle school and moved on to FPS games heavily. My cousins and I always freaked out when we saw the first zombie in Resident Evil 1.
Such a good... Yeah. I remember I was very impressionable when I picked up Resident Evil 1. I was maybe like 9 years old. Not a good time to pick up a game like that when you're nine. And developed a fear of zombies because of that and Night of the Living Dead. And until I was like 20, I still didn't like zombies.
You say that like it's an unusual thing. Like I developed a fear of zombies. Like
no, like thinking they're real as a child. Okay. I'm like, they're all coming right. for me.
Let's say I love zombies.
I mean, now I do. Best I have friend. A whole deck for them now.
It's one of my favorite genres. I love zombies.
Yeah, I think Resident Evil was a seminal game for a lot of people. I think that was just, we hadn't seen anything like that. I didn't play it, but I remember watching a friend play it, and it was just, I mean, even that was creepy. I'm not familiar with Parasite Eve. I'm familiar with it, but I never played it, and that it seems a lot like Resident Evil, like one of those old PS1 games. But I did want to comment on The House of the Dead. Fun fact, that was the first game I ever pirated.
Really?
This must have been in the 90s or something. I think I downloaded it off of an FTP server. And I thought as soon as I loaded that game up that the police were going to kick down my door and arrest me, man. I was so scared. And like, I played a little bit of it and I was like, I got to get rid of the evidence and delete it and empty the recycle bin. But yeah, every time I see that game, it always reminds me of that.
That's a shooting game, Bobby?
It's
yes.
Yeah. So it's a shooting game.
What are you playing it on?
Well, you move your mouse around and you click and shoot on it, which is not the same experience. But yeah, it's meant to be like a Virtua Cop or Area 51 type game where you play it at an arcade with a plastic gun and you shoot at the screen.
They have a lot of them actually at arcades. A few weeks ago, I straight up played House of the Dead as an arcade game. It's a blast. And they have a whole bunch of different ones too. Like they have the Walking Dead one where you can shoot with crossbows. But the House of the Dead arcade games, I prefer. It's much more fun holding like a semi-automatic gun instead of a crossbow. House of
the Dead. The
so,
best House of the Dead.
About 2 weekends ago, me and my friends went out to this like arcade, a brand new arcade downtown. That's pretty awesome. Like it's all the art on the wall is all spray painted. It's all neon, and they have black lights. It's cool. It's cool, and you can drink. It's awesome, and kids, because it's just beer and wine. You can have kids there. It's a really good time, but. Problem is you pay $25 to get in and everything's free, like, and the games work, which is awesome. But guess what? It being free takes the risk out of it and makes the games a little less fun. Not some games. So like pinball has no, it doesn't matter. And then also we played there's a four player shooting game like Halo. And we played that, and it's just like continue and beat the game, and nobody cares. It takes away the whole let's try as hard as I can, you know.
See, I don't agree with that actually. No? Every time, so I do really enjoy going and visiting Tag Loro and seeing him, because there's a place near him that's a cidercade. It's the same concept. Yeah. You go in and you buy a drink and then you're able to play whatever you want. There's not even a cover. It's even cheaper than that. You pay like $7, get a cider, and then you get to play all the games you want. They got Guitar Hero. They got, I think, House of the Dead as well. And I think that it's a lot of fun. I don't like that, because a lot of times with these arcade games, like, they are designed to keep you constantly putting more money in.
Yeah.
So it's
like the Halo game. You can't beat that
scammy.
Game on 1/4.
Yeah, but it's scammy to begin with. So I don't feel like trying hard or not, it's designed to fuck you over and get all your money anyway. So I think it's a nice way that we have options that you can go to an arcade and do that and like play things on Dark Souls mode, or you can go to a different kind of arcade and you can just have a good time.
Mostly it was the pinball. On pinball, I cared less about each ball. When you pay 50 cents for those three balls, you take care
you're
of
those
balls.
Yeah.
You're holding those balls in your hand real hard.
What were you saying, Nick?
What I was going to say is that there was like a golden age of arcade games, and I was lucky to be a part of it for a little while. And that was the idea, like, for example, Time Crisis. When you play Time Crisis, if you knew the things like the hacky parts, like where it's like, remember to shoot the guys in red because they instantly hit you. But there was also a cover mechanic. Once you played a couple times, you're like, all right, I understand this. And you could beat the game with one or two quarters.
But how many quarters did it take you to learn those things?
Look, Amelia, we're not talking about semantics right now.
A whole roll.
But what I'm saying is, like, the new Halo one, I know exactly what you're talking about, the Jurassic Park one, all that stuff. You cannot avoid that damage. You cannot avoid taking those hits. And so it's like, it really is just like, experience this for 5 fucking minutes and then give me more money for another 5 minutes or leave.
Yeah.
Which is why I pay to win.
Yeah, which is why I'd prefer, like, especially with the House of Dead kind of games or any of the scary based arcade games. Like, I think it is a lot better when you just pay and you can keep playing. Because in my experience, too, when I have played a lot of those, like the House of Dead, the guns, I mean, it's kind of like you can tell that it has scared the shit out of some people that the guns themselves don't work as well anymore. So they're kind of, they're also a little sticky triggered as well, or like not registering or calibrated as well either. Which, you know, I could argue makes it a little bit more fun of the scariness, but not when you're dropping, you know, all of those coins. So that's
dude, playing the Mario Kart game with four players with no coins, god, that was so much fun. Just like, who cares about who wins? You love winning, but then like the losers don't care because they just say, let's go again. That was a really good one. Anyway, let's go back to Halloween.
All right, so Emilio, you're up. What are your favorite scary games?
So I didn't go with scary games versus like the scariest moments of my video gaming career that I can remember. So Resident Evil was a CD on PS1, I believe, and so
correct.
Me and my best friend went to GameStop and bought the thing and rode the bus and got back to my house and ran to my house and then put it in the CD and then locked the door, shut the case on the PS1, push the power button, and the first thing you hear is Resident Evil. And like, oh fuck, we're in for it now, buddy. Because like, it's a whole thing, like the hype on the video, on the magazines, the people talking about it, marketing campaigns these days wish they could have a smattering of what that was, you know,
because
there's just too many games at this point.
Yeah, it's just flooding. Everybody's done something or everybody wants to be something. And unless you have something truly unique, you're like, this is a clone of this, or this feels like this. So you never get that Resident Evil. And then when you press it, it goes, pushing, and you're like, oh shit. Or like the idea of having limited amounts of save slots because you have, the ink cartridges and all that stuff. Like all that stuff's been done before, but back then you were like, oh shit.
Yep. And then, so I went to look for these exact moments, and boy, was I let down. Now that I look at it, you know, I didn't just run home. I'm not in a dark room with my friend, and these graphics are horrendous, but at the time it did its job. And so at the very beginning of Resident Evil, first 5 minutes inside of the mansion, you go down the right hallway and it just looks like a regular hallway. And then these zombie dogs burst through the windows. We lost our shit. I dropped my controller. My friend ran. Like, it was so, so, so scary. But, you know, like that compared to something today would be mild, you know? I think everything just keeps getting amped up, but I don't know how old I was at the time, but this is probably high school, some point in high school. And that was crazy scary. After that, the next one that I remember, Doom 3 was, so this is opposite of what you guys were kind of saying before, but not because you guys were wrong, but only because like this is one of the only games to let you kill things. And it's also scary as shit. Like, you have a laser rifle, and yet it's still scary, you know? So one of the big things about Doom 3 was light or fight. You either had your flashlight out in the darkest moments, pitch black, or you had your gun out. You could not have both. So you had, you'd identify the target, switch to your gun, and hopefully the muzzle flashes gave you enough light to see that you were hitting targets. I mean,
which is such a cool concept, right?
So, yeah. And then, you know, the first mod for this game was the duct tape mod that puts the flashlight on every gun. But I was like, that's not what the developers wanted. So this, if anybody clicked on my link, this, it's a pitch black room. And there's these specimen vials, like full length, 6 foot specimen vials that are traversing through this room. And the only light that comes through the room is from these specimen vials, which are monsters. There's monsters in capsules providing the light for the room. It's not that this was the scariest part in the move in the game. It's that I had hit a critical mass on fear level. Like I could not play any more scary. I couldn't do it. I couldn't. And so I closed my eyes and I ran through this room until I got to the end. Like, I don't know how many times it, and I just fought at the end of the room where there was a little bit of light, and I just fought them all off. Like I couldn't deal with it anymore. Like, it was too scary. So that exists. The other scene in that game was the bouncing baby hallway. So you're going through this hallway and you start hearing babies crying, and these cherubs that can't quite fly with no legs are bouncing towards you and crying, and you kill them, and it is awful. And I'm not sure how many more times they use that model throughout the game. Like, it's only like a 15 minute part of a 9 hour game. And it is like, why did they do this? So that I could never sleep right again, dude. That's why they did it.
Yeah, that's fucking horrifying.
Because there are a bunch of assholes over at id Software. That's what happened. That was terrifying. And then Amnesia: The Dark Descent. What I put here was the game that broke me, because after this game, I didn't play scary games. Because I paid full price for this, whatever it wasn't expensive that I remember. And I couldn't play it. It was too scary. So it was the first run and hide game that I had ever played, where you're completely useless. There's nothing you could do against the monster. You can't even look at the monster, because the looking at the monster kills you and makes your insanity meter go up. So it's the unknown. And I played this, and sometimes your character is crippled with fear. He just lays down, or she just lays down. Can't walk, can't move, just lays down. And I just laid down my scary game career at that point. I said, I'm just going to lay down too, dude. Yeah, I was done. That was it for me. Nick, did you ever play this game?
I did. And I played it really late. No, I had problems with it. I played it like years after it came out, and I'm like, fuck this game, dude. And I got Leslie to try one of the newer ones, and she was like, fuck this game. She's like, it's so scary.
I couldn't get out of the first room, and I quit horror games after this game too. I'm serious. Yeah. I love Amnesia. I had so much fun watching my friend play it, but even watching my friend play it, I'd be like hiding with a blanket and just like looking over. And then the moment the music would start changing, or you'd see, like, you could tell the monster's close, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm done. I can't handle the run and hide games where you have no way of protecting yourself. I freak out. And I think it's that like psychological kind of horror thing that my anxiety just goes to like 12, and I just think it's going to be so much worse than it is. But with Amnesia, it is as worse as you think it's going to be. It's fucking terrifying.
And it makes Doom 3 that much more special. Like, you are the ultimate weapon. You are an unkillable zombie machine, and still you're a little bitch that gets scared, you know? Because when you go to Doom 2016, which was a great game, I was never scared. I was the monster. I was ripping these guys apart.
That's the whole point. And yeah, that's the whole point. But the new one makes it worse. They actually run away from you.
Yeah, they do. They do run away from you.
Yeah, no, the one that they're coming out where it's like in the knight era with like knights and crossbows and shit. Yeah, they like in the trailer you can see them running away from you. I'm like, oh,
and I'm not gonna put it here, but everybody knows that I really like the Little Nightmares video games. But that's my level of fear now. That's where I can go. Little characters, claymation characters walking left to right is as far as I can go because Amnesia scarred me for life.
Yeah, scarred me too. I want to take a moment to kind of go back on one of the things that you talked about though with Resident Evil, because like I just kind of want to have a moment of like appreciating Resident Evil as a franchise, just because we've talked a lot too about how at the time it was like so incredible, but I think Resident Evil has kind of been keeping up in a lot of ways with the technology. Like for me, Resident Evil really stood out with number 4 with the Wii. It was like the first time that I felt like I could really play it, and like my controller was the gun, and like in the village I was killing everybody, and like I loved Resident Evil 4. But I feel like they have done actually a very good job as a horror franchise to keep up generationally, just consistently.
Yep. Oh yeah. Because when they hit to the point where they couldn't, they just started remaking the old ones, and that was the perfect move.
Yes.
And the thing is, they add stuff to them, and they improve the mechanics, and they improve the engine, and all these other things that people had problems with, and then they're even polished, so they're even scarier. And the thing is, like, it's funny you look at like the evolution of Resident Evil, because like you can see where they go from like scary zombie game to a little bit faster scary zombie game to scary zombie game that's kind of an action game to essentially action game, and then extreme no more scary zombies, just tentacle monsters game, and then back to scary, like back to horror game in a house. You're almost defenseless. You have to figure out these puzzles. There's always something at the like with the hand on the back of your neck kind of feeling. And I think that's one thing that Capcom deserves some credit for, and they really don't sometimes. So,
yeah, it's really nice. And I think, yeah, it's so incredibly intelligent that they went back and remake it or remade such great classics, which leads a beautiful transition into my favorite scary game, which is Silent Hill 2. And recently they made a remake of it and came out on October 7th about it. And it has such overwhelmingly positive reviews from that. They seem to have done such a good job remaking it. What's funny is I can remember with PlayStation 2 when it came out, like this was the game that I always would go over to my best friend's house and watch him play, because once again, I couldn't handle playing it, but I loved watching this game. And then as I traveled, I actually went to a place that is, and all intents and purposes in the U.S., considered America's like Silent Hill. I mean, obviously it's not Silent Hill. They did use the church from this town to showcase in the Silent Hill movie, because I loved that movie as well. But I think Silent Hill 2 did such a fantastic job of like really creating such an immersion, just fear, and like kind of really having you dive into the setting and really feel like you're there. And it was just really gripping. I thought the story was really fantastic too. But yeah, if anybody ever gets the chance to visit Centralia, Pennsylvania, fucking do it, because there's like two people that live there. It was a really old coal town that had this horrible, tragic fire that went through, and like the fires are still burning in the mines, to where like on some of the days to this day, you can see all this smoke and kind of almost like this ashiness rising that definitely has this eerie feeling of Silent Hill 2. And when I drove through it, it really did feel like Silent Hill, and it was crazy. They have this huge highway that is completely abandoned. The whole place feels super abandoned. You can definitely see how some of that, especially that church, like were showcased in the movie and why they chose that. Super cool. Silent Hill 2 to me was like the first true introduction to horror games, and where I really grew to love them, especially watching them instead of playing them, because I'm a scared little bitch. But I love them. They're great. But, so
Amanda, that's like a super scary game.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, you quit or like lowered your level quite a bit. So was that the game that broke you, would you say? Or
No, it's kind of like the game inspired me to watch more just because like I'm just so reactive a lot of times. It probably is anxiety, but I'm very reactive to like a lot of games anyway, like Skyrim. I got really scared at seeing a spider come down. Like spiders tend to always get me in games. I freak out when I see spiders. I don't handle like dark rooms very well in games either because I am always terrified that they're going to do a jump scare and then I freak myself out. But Silent Hill 2 actually really kind of started the passion for a lot of different horror games and watching them. And then actually the fear climbing up the ladder and the jump scare there made me put it down a little bit and not play so much. That was too much because that was, yeah, around the time of like The Grudge and I couldn't watch that. And then I started getting a little bit more into horror games again with Resident Evil and Resident Evil, like especially 4, but then moving on with the other Resident Evils until Amnesia, and then Amnesia ruined it for me. So I was starting to kind of try and get back into them a little bit more too, but
it's funny because like you would think that like a seminal game would attract more people, but it sounds like as far as this podcast goes, 50% of the people on this podcast play less scary video games because of Amnesia.
Yeah.
It was such a good addition to the gaming world. I actually played it after Outlast. And I was like, fuck, dude. Like, come on, man.
I think it was the original run and hide scary game.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, I think it's a masterclass of horror games, actually. Oh, yeah. Like, I would argue it is, yeah.
It's disturbing. It's not jump scares. It disturbs you.
Oh, there is jump scares still.
Yeah, of course. Did anybody here beat it?
No.
No. I got like 2 hours.
Bobby?
No, I haven't even played it.
Wow,
you should play the fan remake.
Okay, yeah, maybe. I mean, so much time has passed, and it's like, you know, like I said, the run and hide genre, like I'm not really into anymore. So I just never went back to play it. But if there's a fan remake, that might be more interesting. All right.
I mean, speaking of Amnesia, the same creators, right, as what our next listener is talking about when it comes to Soma. If you want to take it away, Bobby.
Yeah. So we've got another listener suggestion here. This one is from Nyanko, and he says his favorite game or favorite scary game is Soma. He says, I love this kind of story that makes you think about the disadvantages of copying or cloning yourself. Every NPC was interesting and disturbing, and you could picture their suffering. The visuals were beautiful with these desperate underwater environments and scary robots. I think the hiding and chasing was good too. He also says, as a bonus, he wanted to include his favorite scary VR game, which we didn't really touch on that, but VR really heightens that fear factor there. But he says Organ Quarter, because when I wanted to save progress, I had to put my head into TV monitors filled with entrails. Oof. Also, for the dance floor full of dancing flesh monster duos that you have to cross. Good, challenging gameplay with a limited amount of ammo and labyrinths and puzzles.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Nick's typing away. He's buying this shit right now.
Yeah, it sounds gross. What do you call it? Isn't Nyanko from like the Netherlands?
From Belgium.
Belgium. Yeah, they like their fair share of crazy horror and gore.
Yeah, now yeah. Soma... I'm glad you mentioned this game. That's a great game. I came so close to beating this. I swear I only have like an hour or two left of this game. I should just go back and finish it off. But I remember this being a really popular game, and Chi also really liked this game too.
Yeah, she loved it.
And I think that was the reason I went and played this game. And it is very good. It takes place underwater. It's got a little bit of sci-fi to it. As well as horror. It is kind of a walking simulator / run and hide thing, but it's not as like gory, scary, jump out boo type of horror game, but it is more of like, I don't know, like an intellectual, atmospheric type of horror game, but it was very good. VR, I don't know, man, that's too much. This Organ Quarter game. So I looked at a little bit of the footage and the pictures on the Steam page, and I don't know, man. I don't know about that game.
It looks horrifying.
It looks pretty fucking bad.
There's a lot of giblets in there.
A lot of giblets, a lot of, yeah, dingling little things, all kinds of anatomical stuff. Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. It's rated so high, too, which is nice to see.
This is from 2017. Never heard of this game, but yeah.
So everybody agrees that it's scary, but nobody's going to play it, right?
No.
No.
I mean, it looks kind of like nauseating. Like, it's got a lot of body
dude,
parts.
What movie did you just go to pay full price
to?
Yeah,
you just saw.
Yeah, you just went to go see
it. Was it Terrifier or Brutalizer?
Terrifier 3.
I've been seeing
dude.
A lot of messed up movies lately, man. I saw Terrifier 3. I saw The Substance is not, I mean, that's body horror. And then I saw that.
Was it good or was just the story told to me?
The Substance?
Good?
No, it was great. Yeah, it was awesome.
No. Nice to know.
Yeah.
So, somewhat of a bird walk, what's everybody's favorite scary movie of all time?
Oh, The Strangers, I think it's called. It's the one that are based off the people that were pretending to be Mormons, and then they killed people. What's it? 2000 from 2008. Yes, and then they got a remake.
Do you like the remake more or the 2008 one?
I haven't seen the remake, to be honest. I didn't want anything to do about it. What I will say is that my second favorite scary movie, which feels a lot more like a cult classic slash like kind of made on a budget, but still super scary because of the concept of it, is It Follows. We talked about this movie before on the podcast, but if you're a new listener, whatever, the premise of the movie is that there is something that is always chasing an individual. And the only way that the person can get this thing to stop chasing them is by having sex with another individual.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
The movie is an allegory for STDs. And what it is like the way the movie starts, and I'm not going to spoil it. You're just like, what the fuck? Because it explains everything in the movie to you in the first 10 minutes. And you're just like, oh, the training wheels are off. And they were supposed to make a sequel. I don't know what the fuck happened to that. I really want them to. I wish that series got, but that movie got a sequel. They said that they were going to say like where the origins of the thing came from. And then like kind of, and then they wanted to make it. I think there was a rumors of one making the movie in like the 70s, which is like a really interesting time because everybody's fucking. But yeah, it just, that movie, the impending doom feeling, because just the way the movie starts, you're like, oh, this is a good movie. And it's got great reviews.
I'm so happy that you said that, because I'm not going to lie. When I was first thinking of like the scary movies that I would put on my list, I couldn't remember its name. And thank you. That is the one I'm thinking of, because like, wow. I was like, man, there's one where there's a monster that's like basically an STD. And the thing that follows, I'm also not going to spoil too much. All I'm going to say is that it's, I think, one of the more creepiest like things I've seen that like will follow people. It's fucking terrifying, like, and it has stuck with me for years, that movie. But thanks, dude. Yeah, I wrote that down because I forgot what it was called. But that is the movie.
I could talk about scary movies all day, dude. Like Midsommar, I love that shit because it's more of the human aspect instead of supernatural. It also takes place almost entirely during the day. Me and Bobby, we talk about movies all day, buddy. But we gotta move.
Oh,
on.
For sure, yeah.
Bobby, hit us with the deep cut, dude.
Hit us with that like French film about like spoons being bad for you. Something, dude. Come on, where's it at?
Oh my god. I don't know, man. Like, you asked me what my favorite movie or scary movie is. There's just way too many. Let me hit you with this. So this is very interesting. 1960 is a very interesting year for scary movies because three movies came out. So in America, that was when Psycho came out. Even though that was by Alfred Hitchcock, who's British, like he's working in the American system. It's an American movie. At the same time, there's a British movie called Peeping Tom that comes out, which got slammed by the reviews. No one ever heard of it until years later. People actually gave it a fair shake and discovered this movie's actually really, really good. And then in France, Eyes Without a Face come out, which is very much more on the side of like body horror. But it's really interesting because you've got these three different movies from three different countries, and it kind of shows you how each country does horror differently. And these are all like foundational scary movies, but they're not super long. They're very short. You've probably already seen Psycho, but I would recommend, like, in a weekend, watch all three of these movies, Psycho, Peeping Tom, and Eyes Without a Face.
Eyes Without a Face just sounds like a Magic the Gathering card that looks terrifying. And I like it.
Yeah, well, it's also that song, and it's a French movie, so it's actually, you know, there's
extra scary.
But yeah, it's a really interesting snapshot of horror and like the foundation of it and how like the different countries kind of interpreted what's scary to them. And Peeping Tom, man, that's really like I said, nobody remembers that movie because it just got like buried under bad reviews and then just not talked about forever. But that is a very, very interesting movie. Yeah. So that's my weird answer.
Emilio left because he has to go pee pee because he has the bladder of a 5-year-old. So I'll say something for him just to kind of fill the air. Amanda, have you ever been scared of a YouTube video?
I want to say that when all the Slenderman shit came out and people were kind of making home like fake videos of Slenderman, like those things have kind of freaked me out. Or they used to do those like little ad things where it'd be like, oh yes, a beautiful car, and it looks like a car ad, and then all of a sudden some zombie face just pops and jump scares you, and like I'd scream and be like, I'm quitting the internet for the day. Otherwise not really any movies. Why?
There is a 15 minute video on YouTube, and it's called Other Side of the Box, and it is supposed to be very, very scary. It's a short film, essentially. It's got a 92% likeness or liked rating on
YouTube,
on Google. It is so scary.
Good to know. I'll check it out probably tonight.
Scary movies for me. I saw E.T. when I was, I took Nick to see American Werewolf in Paris.
Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah. And it scarred him for life. I went to go see E.T. I just looked it up right now. So I would have been 4 or 5 when I went to go see E.T. And I was like, there's aliens in the sky. There's monsters in the sky that can come, 3-foot monsters that can come in your room. And watch you sleep, dude. I didn't sleep for months, dude. Like, we were talking about it last night. We're out. We're like, what's the scariest thing? I was like, I'd rather fight a dragon that can chomp me up than a 3-foot fucking creature watching me at night from space, dude.
I mean, especially if you open up the closet and it's wearing red lipstick and a dress. Oh my God, dude. Yeah.
That might be
the worst part about it. The worst part about it is I cried when he left at the end of the movie. What a great movie for, you know what I mean? Like I laugh, I cried, I shit my pants. Like
all the secretions. All the secretions. Now that's real horror. That's real body horror right there.
What's up with Dead Space, fellas?
All right. Yeah. So Nick and I both have Dead Space on our list. Nick put Dead Space 2, but I put the first one. We all know Dead Space, the sci-fi horror, third-person shooter. When the first one came out, it just, I think, was a little revolutionary in a way, especially in the way that it defined cinematic gameplay. I mean, it looked like a movie, which really helps in a horror game. They got rid of the UI. You know, in every game, you always have a UI, and it's always, you know, very non-diegetic, meaning it's not actually in the story of the game. It's got, you know, it has to count things like your health and your ammo or some sort of energy. And Dead Space had this really crazy idea of just getting rid of that entirely and showing that on Isaac, the main character's armor. Also, when you pulled up inventory screens, they were like these projected 3D images, very futuristic looking, but everything exists within the game. There's nothing that's like outside of the game until you hit that escape button and go into the game's menu. Like you are in that world.
One of the scariest parts of that thing, right, where it's like the hologram menus and everything, is things could still fuck with you. And the thing is, in the newest version,
the menu
of the game,
screen
the remake,
was not a pause screen.
it was not a pause screen.
Yeah.
And in the newest version of the game, apparently there are areas where if you do pause, if you do go into your menus, you're more likely to be attacked because the AI is completely changed. For the newest version, they attack in like droves. It's been like in all these other things. It's a little bit scarier in my opinion because of the graphics, but it's still the same Dead Space one.
It does make sense. If you were like a shitty little goblin monster, you'd attack when he was like reading his book, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, when you're like, well, oh, I don't know, these monsters, I'm not sure how sentient they are. They're just running at They're you, trying to. Attack you.
They have wives and lives, dude. These are, you know, they go home, they punch in, they punch out.
Well, what the other thing that I really liked about this game, and probably doesn't get maybe as much credit as the UI, was the way that they did the actual shooting of the game. So you don't have guns really, you have tools, and you have to dismember the monsters, which is pretty common in a horror movie, having to dismember to fully kill them, but it made first person shooting a lot more fun because you'd have to like change the angle of the weapon or hit certain parts to like hit in a joint where it would actually sever the limb. Like it gave you something to aim for other than the head. It kind of made the gameplay a little more interesting. Now, I don't know if it sustained the whole 12 hours of gameplay that the first one is. Also, you've got that weird silent protagonist thing that everybody used to do for some weird reason. And they try to work in like some of this, you know, you play this scientist who's investigating a ship where something bad happened and, you know, something went wrong and you have to go find out what it was, which is like every sci-fi horror movie ever, right? But one of the people on that ship, I believe, was your wife. So they try to play that up. Like sometimes you find some pictures or something, but the guy's a silent protagonist. He doesn't say a thing. So it's just like it falls flat on its face. They got rid of that in the second and third game, though. I don't think
they got rid of that in the remake, too. He talks a lot.
What, that guy is shut the fuck up?
No. Isaac's like, hey, everybody, we're going to die. He doesn't talk like that. But the remake, I think if you like Dead Space 1, you should definitely play the remake because so many things have been added and the bad parts have been removed. It's such a classic, man.
Yeah, and the remake is very highly rated, too.
Yeah, it's...
good reviews.
Since we're on Dead Space 2 now, I'll kind of talk about why I love the game. And if they made a remake of Dead Space 2, I would play it every night until I beat it with Leslie, and I would tape her to the sofa so she had to watch all the terrifying parts. Because I remember, so when me and Leslie got married, we only knew each other for 6 months, and it sounds like a Mormon wedding, but it's not. Yeah, you were there. And we've been together for 8 years now, right? Eight, Leslie? Yeah, seven. There we go. I can't count. Anyways. We've been together for 7 years now, and there's a lot of like, you know, most people get married after like 3-4 years, maybe sometimes five. So there was things that we didn't know about each other. And Leslie discovered that I loved video games, very much so. And she was like, well, what's one of your like favorite scary games? I go, do you want to see one of the scariest introductions to a video game of all time? And she's like, sure. And the opening cinematic for Dead Space 2 is one of the scariest in the world. Because you've been arrested, you're in a straitjacket, and the guy who's putting you in a cell gets his brain sucked out, and then everyone's turning into nightmare creatures, and you have to run while straitjacketed. And it's one of the best first 2 minutes in any video game as far as like scary goes or like how the game wants to make you feel. And it is so good. I would play a remake of that game in a heartbeat.
I don't know if they're going to remake that one. I don't know if there's as much love for Dead Space 2 as the original. The second one really did lay all its cards on the table, like right up front. A lot of blood and guts.
Atmosphere horror.
The second one,
in my opinion, So like, there's a very key scene that if funny enough, one of my friends is playing Dead Space right now. He's playing the fucking remake. I just saw it on Steam. But Dead Space 2, there's a very pivotal moment that when my friend got to it, he texted me immediately. He was like, bro. And I was like, let me guess, the gym. And he's like, yeah. So there's a moment where it's very similar to the game that you were talking about, Emilio, or Doom 3, where the babies are, like hopping up and down and they can barely fly.
Why are babies so scary, dude?
Well, babies are terrifying.
You don't expect developers to fuck with the like babies or children. Right. And in the first Dead Space, they do have children, but they don't have babies. And then you're like, what happens to babies if they get necromorphed? And so there's a moment where you're hearing crying, or you're not hearing crying. I think you hear like a lullaby, and it's like the system, the robotic system, like putting things to sleep. And you're like, that doesn't sound like there's something good coming up. Cause if there's a lullaby, that means that there's tiny things, and tiny things tend to move fast. And the way it works is that you go inside the nursery and then you start hearing like cooing, like, ooh, like little baby cooing. And then you turn the corner and there's just a little fucking baby on the ground that's like swollen with like pus and it's glowing yellow and it can explode. And it just starts rolling towards you, like somersaulting towards you. And it's like not super fast, but you're like, oh, it's so gross. And then you're like, all right, well, that was terrifying. And then you go a couple little bit more and then you go into the school gym. And now in the gym, imagine like 70 of those things coming at you, along with children, along with things that yell at you, along with like all these other necromorphs. And you're very much in a wide open area, which is not very prominent in the game. It's a lot of hallways, a lot of twisting and turning because you're like going through access doorways and stuff. But when you're in this wide open gym, you're like, oh, fuck. Like it really hits you hard. I miss that game so much. I like the feeling that it gives me. Like playing the remake was great. There's a lot of nostalgia to it. It's still scary, but the way Dead Space 2 made you feel at certain moments was really good. The way it is the bridge between action game and horror game for the genre. I mean, for the series, because the third one is just a straight action game. You're customizing your weapons to shoot saw blades that bounce off the walls. You can increase damage by 25%. You never run out of bullets. You play with Bobby, and then he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I made this fully automatic shotgun. Everything dies in one hit." He's like, "Okay, this isn't fun anymore."
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 got really weird. It also was really weighed down with microtransactions. I don't think it's like that anymore, but when it first came out, they really nickel and dimed you. All right, let's check in with the listeners. We've got something from Warconius here. He's got a lot to say. He says, "Scariest experience with a game was playing late at night in my brother's old secluded house in the Maritimes. A level from the Vampire, the Masquerade Bloodlines. That was so unexpected and so creepy. It's an absolute classic. While vampires itself are not scary, this level gets you with jump scares, ambience, and a spooky tale that you uncover as you explore the abandoned beachside hotel. Also, a shout out for Until Dawn, a great interactive 90s slasher-styled video game." And then he goes on to say,
just a quick interjection. Did you hear the drama with Until Dawn right now?
Have not.
They're remaking it, even though it's like 6 years old.
I thought it was like 10 years old.
Huh. Is it? Well, anyways, they're remaking it and it's coming to PS5 and it's enhanced and stuff. And I'm like, this is not the game to spend money on remaking. There's so many other games to do.
I'm looking at the Steam page and it shows that it was rebuilt and enhanced and released on October 4th, like recently.
Yes,
just came out. That's the way I already did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it just came out that they rebuilt it.
A lot of people were like, okay.
Yeah, that seems kind of cool. Nobody wants to check that out? Like, I
Warconius, check it out. Yeah. Let us know how it is, dude.
Send us a little video for the Instagrams. We'll put it on there.
It's pretty dope.
Okay, so he's got a little bit more here. He says, "The most recent game that freaked me out is Death Stranding. Ever since PT and parts of Metal Gear Solid 5, Kojima proved that he can make some really terrifying experiences. And encountering BTs for the first time in Death Stranding will make your skin crawl. The music, the sound effects, and the fact that the BTs are difficult to see make it more impactful. For me, the scariest games are the ones that don't entirely set out to be a horror game."
So if I want to expand on Warconius' feelings, because obviously his statement doesn't really elaborate on what happens in the game.
First of all, I'm pretty sure that Warconius is like an AI working for Kojima, because literally every week he just tries to get some Kojima hype going on our podcast.
He's a fanboy. Because
he knows I like him too. Yeah. I mean, everyone has their fandoms, right? Mm-hmm. You have alcohol. Bobby has robotics. Amanda has Seattle. Everybody has something. You
sure.
Know? I'm kidding.
Oh, there's a lot of Kojima fans out there. I don't think that's quite the unusual.
Unusual. He's like the Quentin Tarantino of the gaming world, where people have fandoms over him and they're into feet. Sure. So, what do you call it? What I do want to expand on what he's talking about on the BTs for Death Stranding. So if you've never played the game, essentially the world goes to shit because of the internet or whatever. And whenever anyone dies, it's essentially like a nuclear bomb is going off. Now, there are these things called BTs. They float in the air and they're very difficult to see unless you go get closer to them. And if it's raining, they're a little bit easier to see because the rain drops on them. And the other thing is when there's like this little claw on your backpack that tends to flash and make noises and when they're near and they start pointing to them. And there's moments where you're forced to go through them. You're forced to walk beneath them or walk around them. And they look like they've been hanged and they have organic tubes coming out of the back of them. And they kind of look like ink monsters. And what happens is if you get discovered, the game tells you, it's like, if you get discovered, you're pretty much fucked, right? Like you're like, nah, I can run away from them. It's fine. They start shooting ink under you and you can't fucking walk. You start sticking to the ground. You try to climb stuff. You can't climb because it's still on your hands when you get out of it because your character's stumbling. And that's like a big mechanic of the game is stumbling and like touching the ground and stuff like that. And then finally, they start doing crazy shit like summoning a fucking whale. And then it goes on over you and splashes on the ground. And then like the next 100 yards is covered in goop. And it's just insane. And it's super scary.
That sounds scary.
You know, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines is a game I've always wanted to play because I've just heard so many people praise that game, but just never got around to it. And, you know, he's kind of right. Vampires themselves, I don't find them that frightening. I don't think anybody's like, and I think we all kind of agreed on that. And that's why vampires are more like sexy now, like with the whole Twilight thing, like they kind of transition into like, well, they're not that scary. So let's just try a different angle.
Yeah, dude. Like 200 years ago, people were like, there's a creature out there that sucks your blood while you're sleeping. You're like, oh my God, that is so scary. But now we're like, yeah, I've seen fucking Blade.
It's afraid of garlic.
Yeah.
It's just a Asterion. I mean, he's a thirst trap, so it makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
all right. So, Amanda, you're up. What's your favorite scary game?
Well, so I've got one that's kind of a little bit different. I'm hoping and thinking that it's going to become my next favorite game, because obviously we've had the Steam Next Fest going on, and when you listen to this podcast, it will be over with, of course. But I played one of these games during the Next Fest, and it just is one of those games that like has stuck with me so much, just even the demo. And it is this game called Karma: The Dark World. It's a first person point of view kind of walking sim that's a cinematic, like psychological horror. You're supposed to be an investigator for the Thought Bureau agency that's in East Germany in 1984. And you're like investigating crime scenes and suspects and like typically kind of monsters by going into their mind, almost like through a VR headset in this like 80s kind of style setting. You work for this corporation called the Leviathan Corporation, and very 1984 Orwellian. There's mass surveillance, social class rules, all these mind-altering drugs. And I played the demo, and the demo took like 45 minutes, so not even that long. I highly, highly recommend that, especially if they continue the demo after Next Fest, which I feel is almost a 50-50 of the ones that keep the demos and the ones that don't. You should definitely play this, just because it's kind of a mind fuck and it's done very beautifully well, where you're kind of really confused. You're like part cyborg, part not. You're going through these different parts of memory. They really play along with the world of memory, but the world that they've created was just really amazing, and it had such a good way of not being an enormous horror while still being kind of terrifying. In the demo, you're running away from this like kind of monster, and they really play a lot with lights and perspectives and hallways. And it's just it's really such a mind fuck, and was just really, really great and cool. There's like this one moment where you have to stamp paperwork as a worker And it's like, you must every 3 stamps re-ink your stamp. Otherwise, like, the screen and all these things start fucking happening. And it's just crazy. Like, it's so good. And it's such a cinematic, like, interactive story that I think is just done so well. So I'm, like, really hoping that this is about to become the next, like, thing that I get into in the terms of horror, because there were moments that were pretty damn scary. There's definitely some, like, hide from a creature moments and some you're out trying to outrun them. But I think overall the story and the way that this game is made is just incredible. They do this thing too that I think was just so unique in a way and amazing, where you actually adjust the settings as part of the game or the story. So, like, you wake up and they have you get calibrated because you're, like, an investigator, but, like, kind of part cyborg, part human. So you have to calibrate yourself after waking up from a hospital. But the calibrations are shit like brightness and your audio and, like, your point of view and how far out or in you want to be of your first person perspective. But it's designed, like, as if you're the character calibrating yourself in the world that right. you're in. But it's the settings. And I was like, that's such a genius way to implement that in such a cool way, instead of waiting until you can and then hitting escape and going into settings. Instead, they have it change it then, which that I just thought cool. was really cool. Yeah. And so it's a really nice story and a really awesome just like cinematic experience. And it looks like, and it's cool too, because at the end of the demo, they actually do this thing where it kind of flawlessly moves into somewhat of like a here's what you can expect after the demo and some clips and somewhat of a pseudo trailer that is part of the game, because the game also continues after it, which makes it fascinating. Like, you can play a little bit of it after this thing where they show you these clips of what's to come in the game when you have the full game. And so I just think it's one of the most fascinating like demos I've done. It's definitely scary for sure in certain moments, but I think that it overall, like, it's just a really cool thing that's being developed and made. There's no ETA on when it's going to be released, so I'll definitely be wishlisting and keeping an eye on it. But while the demo's out, you guys should absolutely play it. If anybody listening, you know, check in on it to see if they can play the demo, because if you can, it's so worth it. For 45 minutes, it's going to stick with me, I think, for a while. I'm going to be thinking of this game for quite a lot.
Nice. Which nice. Is cool. So creepy looking.
It's creepy. It's a very yeah, creepy so game.
Daisy, I have a question for you. How did you find this? Because I feel like but last episode, you weren't here, but it was 20 minutes ago for us. How me and Bobby had completely different games for Nexlist. Was this like at the top? Did you have to dig for this?
No, this was like somewhere a little bit in the middle. I think, and I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know. I have a sneaking suspicion that Steam is starting to get a lot better with their algorithms of showing you what you think they'd like, because I had way too many investigative games that I'm like, there's no way you're showing this to everybody. I've just been on a huge investigation like binge of video games. And so many of the NextFest things were things based on you're an investigator. And I'm like, I mean, I love those games, but there's like 5 of these in a row, and I don't think you're showing this shit to, like, Emilio.
So. Emilio's getting nothing but vampire fucking survivor games.
No, I get a lot of investigation games, but it's investigating boobs, like anime boobs. It's
the hentai brawler. I saw that too on NextFest. Brawler. Yeah. But I mean, moving into more games that are just beautiful, kind of blurs between a movie and a video game. Bob, if you want to lead us out with Zap's suggestion of his favorite game.
Yep. Zap says, a favorite Halloween tradition of mine and my wife's is to play the Dark Pictures Anthology games from Supermassive, the creators of Until Dawn. These games are all 4 to 5 hour short film versions of horror movies in the style of Until Dawn. Lots of recognizable faces. While the gameplay isn't revolutionary, the scares are there. There are also hints at a meta-narrative taking place over the course of the games as well. Can wholeheartedly recommend them all and can't wait for season 2. You know what's crazy
is... Wow, these look sick.
Yeah, I've never... Maybe I maybe I've seen these games in the past. I don't recognize them. This is like brand new to me. Now, this developer, Supermassive, I do recognize one of their games, The Quarry, which came out 2 years ago. And I remember it being advertised at one of these, you know, it might have been the Game Awards or something else. But the characters in that game, it sounds similar to the Dark Pictures anthology games that he's describing, but the characters in that game are a lot of famous people. You've got like David Arquette there, Justice Smith. Can't remember Ariel Winter. She was a daughter in Modern Family. But a lot of these pretty famous actors. And in the game, the characters look just like the actors. They not only take their voice, but their likeness and use them in the game, which I thought was really cool. Now, I didn't play The Quarry. Maybe I will at some point, but these ones that he's suggesting, like the Dark Pictures anthology. So there's like four or five games in here, starting with Man of Medan, which I think is the highest rated one, but these do look very interesting. I like those, like those short story driven ones that don't really have a whole lot of mechanics, but like they can be really cool to play with somebody. They even mark these as online co-op, split screen and shared co-op. So I'm wondering how that works.
That's pretty cool.
I remember you talking about The Quarry. I thought you had played it, Bobby, but we definitely talked about it. It's like I thought it was a choose your own adventure video movie.
Yeah, well, that's how I think all these games are. They're these choices matter, you know, very like Walking Dead 2012-ish type of game.
Yeah.
I would be very interested in actually checking these out. I'm super happy that you brought this up, Zap, because I also didn't know that these existed. And as I was looking into it, and especially after checking out Karma, which is kind of similar of a pseudo walking sim, minimal mechanics, but like about the story, like, yeah, this looks up my alley for sure. But I didn't know about it, so I'll be checking these out.
Just a shout out to Zap in general. I have taken, I don't know how many, he always advises me on what to buy or like watch, and it's never missed. He's number one on my list for like, What monitor should I buy? I'll hit up Zap and he'll be like, well, I tried these seven and I sent six of them back. You know, he's that guy. So shout out to Zap.
All right. So that is the end of our segment there. Now we do have some listener questions here. We asked people if they had any scary themed listener questions. And this is what we got. One from Nyanko. He asks, if you lived in a country where Halloween isn't celebrated, would you go out of your way to convince people to start celebrating it, and how?
Well, there's a little bit of that going on right now. So Halloween is not celebrated in Mexico, but Tijuana is so close that, you know, it's a very cross-cultural thing going on, you know. Burgers go there, burritos come here, that whole thing. And so they have Day of the Dead where death is celebrated. And then here it's kind of like a spooky, eerie thing. So down in Mexico, they do both now. And Halloween is starting to catch on, but it's not like a full on fledged kids go around begging for candy yet. But in limited amounts, it does happen, which is really interesting, man, because, like, you know, geographic proximity, changing cultural standards or whatever, it's really interesting. I don't know which one will, I don't think, I am a big advocate for Day of the Dead. I think there should be a day that you remember the people that had passed. You should have an altar with pictures of them. So that, like, you can talk to your daughter about your dad who passed or things like that. Because you don't have a day that happens like that in the United States, you know? It might come up because this or that happened. But, like, if you have a regulated day that happens, I'm getting choked up because, like, once I was introduced to this whole thing, that's how it happened to me. And, like, it was really special. And so, but candy for little kids is really special too. So, I don't know. There's no right answer, but a little bit of both is probably really good.
No, yeah. Go ahead, Dace.
Oh, I was going to say, no, I think that that's beautiful too. Cause yeah, a lot of times you really just have the remembrance falling to whatever the, like the anniversary of the death is. Right. And yeah. So to have an altar, to have something that you can connect and often remember and then continue that person's legacy on by remembering them through something that's right there that you see and have a designated spot for and a designated day for, I think is really great and special. I know that yep. for me, with this, if I lived somewhere that didn't celebrate Halloween, I'd be like, well, that sucks to suck. I'm going to celebrate it my own way. which is that usually every single year, I always make sure, no matter where I am, to make mulled wine, which is taking red wine and putting like cinnamon, clove, star anise, and I'll put like a little bit of cardamom in there and like just kind of not boiling it, but keeping it at like a nice little simmer. And then it also makes the house smell pretty nicely, but it tastes delicious. And then you get a little drunk, which gives me enough liquid courage to watch a scary movie. So I at least have to watch one scary movie. If I can turn it into a whole weekend, I will, of like decorating and watching scary movies. But at the bare minimum, my tradition is one. So even if I lived in a place where Halloween wasn't celebrated, I would still be doing that anyway.
It sounds like you're getting drunk off of potpourri. Like
Emilio, have you ever tried it?
It's delicious. Potpourri?
No, that's potpourri, you idiot. Mulled wine.
I can't even smell potpourri, dude. It's I can't.
I'm telling you right now. So do you know what is that tea that paisas make? And it's like usually has like fruit and shit inside of it.
Oh, that's like, it's not a tea, canela? Dude. It's got
tequila in it.
I don't know if you're not talking about sangria.
No, it's not sangria. I'll text my mom and I'll send it to you. Essentially, it's the Mexican version of mulled wine. It's boiled, it's not boiled, but it's like heated up tequila to the point where the alcohol doesn't come out. They put all kinds of herbs and shit, and it's a fall drink. It's very fall tasting.
Awesome. It's delicious.
My tia Nelia makes it every year. She makes a pozole pot full of it and gives it to everybody. Anyways, what I was going to say is, dude, Emilio, I liked it so much that my friend who has a foreign exchange student family in Germany, they sent it to him and he just told them like off the cuff, and they're mega rich. He just told them off the cuff, like, oh, my friend loved it. He's like, he drank the whole carton to himself, even though he had like five cartons. And they were like, oh, okay. And they sent 12 cartons to my house.
Oh, nice.
And it was along with caffeine chocolate from Germany, where it's like, it's chocolate to wake you up. And it has like three times the amount of caffeine than coffee. Check out mulled wine. It's a sleeper.
Yeah. Right. It's great. I think I could convince people to celebrate Halloween off of the mulled wine itself.
100%. Now, Bobby, I know that mulled wine might be a little much for your sober lifestyle, but what about 3x caffeine chocolate?
I don't even like chocolate.
So no. He's a fucking robot, I swear to God.
No, no and no. Okay, got it.
No. Do you have it in Soylent Green?
Yeah. I don't know, man. It would be tough for me if I lived somewhere where they didn't celebrate Halloween, because that is my favorite holiday. And I know it's not celebrated in a lot of places around the world, but I feel like, as Emilio mentioned, that it's starting to catch on a little bit. I mean, it's fun for the kids. People get to dress up, so it's also fun for the adults. I mean, the Halloween parties are always the best parties, right?
Bobby, is it your favorite holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's the only one you don't shit on explicitly.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, it's just like a good excuse to watch a bunch of scary movies. What is on your head, Nick?
Okay, so I'll explain in a muffled voice. I've remembered Bobby was in his costume. And I wanted to bring this up at one point and before the end of the episode. So Vivian's favorite game right now is Tears of the Kingdom, and it's Zelda. And she's like, I want to be fucking Link, dude. Like, make me Link right now. So we bought her a sword, a shield, a costume, a fucking wig. And she's like, what are you guys going to be? And we're like, well, we can't be Zelda and like Ganondorf. That's just like $400 in costumes. So we'll be bad guys. And so these are like the basic bad guys in the game. And yeah, it's got little button eyes. And what it is in the game, you can find this exact mask, and it distracts the enemies so you can get super close to them. And we have another one, and that's Leslie's costume.
That's awesome.
So yeah,
dude.
we're gonna take her around.
How'd you find them? You made them?
The block and walk around with those on.
Did you find those on Etsy, or what'd you do? Oh, did you find those on Etsy or what'd you do? How'd you get that?
No, those were on Amazon. So what sucks is the one I have is way higher quality than the one that we got for Leslie. And I was like, why is there such a big price difference? Because so that's a Moblin and the other one's a Bokoblin. Get it? Anyways.
I thought it was just an aardvark. That's what it looks like.
No. It's called a Moblin. They're like tall and skinny, and then the Bokoblins are like little round dudes. Anyways, the Bokoblin one has like felt eyes, and like it's, I don't know, it's just very different. I'm like, oh, why? They're the same company too. I don't know why they made a difference. But yeah, that's our costume. I wanted to explain that.
All right. We've got one more question. This is from Atom, and he asks, what recent horror game gave you a jump scare where you got up and walked away for a minute or threw your headset down?
If no one has an immediate answer, I
go.
Do. So the last time this happened to me, at least, was when I played PT. There's a moment in the game where in the demo, and mind you, it's the scariest fucking demo in the world, where you're walking through a hallway, and mind you, everyone's PT experience is different. That's the whole part of the game, is that things react differently based on your decisions, and there's thousands of decisions to make. You pick up the phone, you don't pick up the phone, you look in the hole, you don't look in the hole, you walk this way, you don't walk that way. There's a lot of different things, right? That's why there's 11 different endings. But what I will say is there's a moment where this giant scary lady is at the end of a hallway, and you're like, you're probably going to chase me right now, aren't you? And she doesn't. It all depends on what you touch in the house. And if you're paying attention to the notes that are left and all these other things, you know what to touch and what not to touch. Now, I forgot something, what not to touch. And she sprinted down the hallway, because every time I'm touching something, I'm like looking past the hallway, looking past the hallway. I'm like, she move? She not move? And I touched something, and then she started sprinting, and I was like, oh, fuck. And then I just paused the game, and I was like, nope, 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 nope. And I took off my... It was so scary, dude. It's so good.
I'll say recently when we were playing, I can't remember the name of this game. Bobby, what was the game that your mate made us play and enjoy?
Ghost Bane.
Yeah. So it's weird because, like I said, you randomly get hit by these visions that only last 1 second. And it makes you feel not as a group anymore because they didn't see that. So then you're like, you guys fucking see this shit? And nobody's like, what are you talking about? You know, like...
They're like, you're crazy.
Yeah, it's like you're having crazy delusions. And so that's its own kind of terror, that you're going down your own path. You're here standing in the same room with these people. You're not having the same experience. That's really scary. And so hats off to them for that.
All right. Well, this is not a recent example, but I thought a really good jump scare was from a game called Year Walk. This is an older game. It was very, I think, more popular on mobile. And I don't know how effective this would be. It's kind of a creepy game, but there's one scare in it. And just because there's one scare in a game that is otherwise fairly placid, it really is effective. So if you've never played Year Walk, check that game out.
For me, I also have a super old one. I know he said recent. I think the most recent thing I've had where I had to quit was probably Tarkov. So I'm not going to use that because I can't remember exactly, but I get scared a lot at Tarkov and then have to stop because my fear makes me scream with my mic being open mic and then I die. And so then I get mad at myself. But I think the one time I threw a controller at a TV one time when I was playing, get ready for it, Skyrim. Because a spider came down and it freaked me out and I just screamed and launched. And at the time when I had an Xbox, I was sitting in one of those gamer chairs that rock back and forth on the ground. And when I do that, I straight up like threw the controller, screamed, and then the force, I pushed myself back and fell backwards like in some fucking movie and was like, that's it. I need a break. I don't know if I can play Skyrim. And I'm so glad that I did because I love that game. But like, so not scary, but that's where we're at.
I remember reading in PC Gamer, because that's where you find out mods, and the first mod that I knew of Skyrim was changing all spiders to teddy bears. That was the very first mod for Skyrim. Because, yeah, some people just can't handle it.
It's really creepy spiders. I really freak out that. There's another time, I think, with the Jedi Survivor game where there's a huge spider that comes down as well. Oh, yeah. I lost my shit with that one. Like, I don't do spiders in games. They freak me out. So it's the way to get me.
All right. So that is a wrap on our Halloween episode. Christian will be back next week, I believe. He will be joining the show again, so that'll be exciting.
And we get to interview him on the complicated topic of fatherhood and video games.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Will he be a changed man? Don't know.
Don't know.
Just comes in covered in baby throw up and poop. He's just like, hey, everybody.
All right.
But maybe he'll be at DLG Con, and if not, you should be. You should definitely be at DLG Con after this comes out.
That's November 1st through 3rd, like a couple days, 1 or 2 days after you hearing this. So be there. We're going to be there. Don't suck. Yeah. All right. What are you guys going to be playing for the rest of the week? I guess we're in a week in advance. Nobody knows. There could be a new hot shit nobody knows about in 1 week from now. So until then, speak for Nick, Amanda, Bobby, and myself. Motherfucking scary ass vampire bite having titties. Bye, everybody.
Bitty titties.
Amelia, what are you doing tonight?
Fucking drunk, dude. Like, really drunk.